Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's Alonzo. Ball back to Zion. Oh, my heaven. Straight away three.
Absolutely! Good! Huh? Everybody up.
Nobody expected that.
Nope. This is Dirt and Sprague.
Alley-oop Zion. Lay it in good. From up top, Lonzo Ball. I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go.
Oh, now Zion again. Straightaway three. Good again. Good again.
Just like they drew it up.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
No look feed to Zion. Oh, he didn't take the three. Now he's got it. Right wing three again. Got it again! You have got to be kidding me!
Floated into Zion. Aldridge on him. Up top Lonzo. Stutter step back to Zion. Oh my, step back three.
Left wing! Swish!
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful Thursday afternoon.
Just gorgeous outside. I feel like I'm hosting a show in New Orleans right now. Welcome in. Let's eat some gumbo and talk Zion for 3 hours.
Let's scream every time something in a game happens.
Little disrespectful to the rest of the sports slate last night there, Joe.
Yeah, you went really heavy on the Zion stuff,
yeah,
huh?
I get it, man. He went off in the fourth. It was awesome. But, you know, how about Columbus getting a win over Winnipeg? A couple of former Winterhawks with goals.
The Jets lost, dude.
Oliver Bjorkstrand had two. Seth Jones had one, combining for three of the four goals. Could have been a nice little open highlight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did I know Seth Jones was on Winnipeg? No. I thought he's still in Nashville. But
he's on Columbus. He's on
Columbus? I thought he was. Has he always been on Columbus?
No, he's not always
okay,
been on
thank
Columbus.
You. Yeah. Well, that's kind of right. Hey, I knew where he started.
Zion went off, and so did that announcer. I had to get him in every single clip there. That was awesome.
Yeah. I want to start with a technology story.
Okay.
I am a big believer in technology saving the human race from catastrophe. I also think people take technology and use it for the wrong reasons, obviously. I want to know what you guys think about the use of this technology. So this is from the BBC, okay?
Okay.
Mummy returns. Voice of 3,000-year-old Egyptian priest is brought to life. So scientists... And what are they called when they're digging for mummies? What are those people called?
Archaeologists?
Maybe archaeologists.
Sure. It's like Indiana Jones, isn't it? Same thing, same family.
They teamed up and they found a mummy but went by the name of Nesyamun. And Nesyamun lived in the years 1099 and 1069 BC.
Okay, a little bit ago.
Okay, he lived a long time ago. He was a priest back when he lived. And they found his body perfectly mummified. So they took it to this scientific lab, and they dove in. And the cool thing about Nesyamun is that his voice box is perfectly intact. So what they were able to do...
This is wild.
...was print his voice box using a 3D printer, and then they tone it to the larynx they got in his throat. And they can produce exactly how he sounds when he talks. Now, they give you a sample size on this. It's like a one vowel sound. And I clicked it because I'm curious. Like, what did somebody back then sound like?
Is it like the Yanni or Laurel thing?
It kind of, it kind of sounds like that.
It's lit.
Yeah. It's not a debatable thing of what he's saying because it's just a vowel
sound. It's just a sound, yeah.
But it sounds a lot like the Yanni or Laurel sound. And the reason they think it sounds that way isn't because of the computer. It's because they believe he was a priest who had to sing as part of his duty as a priest. So they think his voice sounds that way because that's what a singer's voice sounded like
back then.
Way back then.
How would you have any form of understanding about how a voice would sound all the way back then?
Because they can study the voice boxes of other mummies and see if there's a commonality there.
It's a little too complex for me.
It's very complex. But the fact that you can 3D print anything in life, yeah, like you can 3D print a gun, you can 3D print food,
right?
Anything. And they're doing it now to hear what humans sounded like 3,000 years ago?
This is where
that blows my mind.
This is where I question if these scientists are just sitting in a room getting super blazed and like, what if we like took a mummy, right, and made a 3D printing of his voice box, but they're actually smart enough to do it and actually go through with
Isn't that kind of messed up too? Like you find an old mummy that old and you just start cutting into the wrappings? Like you just got to carve them up like that?
Desecrating the grave?
Yeah, I mean,
there was a belief that when you were mummified, you had to be that way for the afterlife.
Right. So they're totally screwing that up.
Do you disturb the afterlife process according right. to what their old religion was?
He's hanging out in heaven right now like, hey, what the hell, man? Quit cutting my wrappings open. I always picture the turkey scene from Christmas Vacation when they cut it open on Christmas Eve. Oh. I just always picture that's what it looks like when you cut them on the open.
All cut dry.
Yeah, it's like, oh, God, what the hell's going on in there, man?
Now, I'm not so much curious what it's kind of cool to discover that they have this kind of technology, but I'm not so much interested in like what a priest from 3,000 years ago sounded like. I actually wish that they would be able to find a dinosaur. I want to know what a dinosaur really sounded like.
You want a T-Rex voice box?
Yeah, because my T-Rex sounds like a mix of a lion with an elephant with like a lizard.
Well, it's all
because that's
our,
what they created in Jurassic right. Park. They used like 7 different animal noises, combined sure. them.
That's all our understanding. That's the only one we got.
And that's what they concluded the sound of a dinosaur is. I want to know the real sound of a dinosaur. Was it scary?
It's probably like not intimidating.
Well,
at
what
all.
If it wasn't intimidating? It was just like, arr. Arr.
I'm a T-Rex. Get away.
Arr. Arr.
That would be the most disappointing thing of all time. You know what else I learned about dinosaurs? I don't know if you guys knew this. Maybe I'm just an idiot.
We're going in the Wayback Machine today, folks.
The velociraptors were apparently tiny.
They were tiny with feathers.
What the hell?
Yeah, Jurassic Park's raptors are not close to being true.
So those are like the most outside of the T-Rex, which is, of course, the king of the dinosaur kingdom.
Sure.
Like the velociraptor was number two. He was the Dwight Schrute of dinosaurs.
But he wasn't, though.
And I know my whole understanding of the species is just out the window.
They're little ankle biters is what they are.
I mean, it kind of was, yeah.
Jurassic Park skewed our view on a lot of different dinosaurs.
Very skewed. They think raptors could have been about the size, like standing up as a Great Dane.
Really? That's it?
And Great Danes are tall dogs, you know, but you're still like, that's like 3 feet. You're like 3.5-4 feet tall.
Razor sharp claws, though. That's
where
they do the
damage. Well, they had one claw. Yeah, they did have one big claw, but they had feathers.
Seems pretty easy to neutralize, I'm not going to lie.
If the T-Rex, Joe, how did the T-Rex sound?
Rawr.
Then the raptor probably sounded like?
It's probably much intimidating. Probably like that.
You think the raptor was more intimidating sounding than the T-Rex?
Exactly, okay. Yeah.
All right. Look at us just figuring out history on this show.
Somebody said the Raptors got to change their logo. They do, man.
Yeah.
This is false advertising here. It's like the Utah Jazz.
There
Nobody's
was someone that did that. They redid the Raptors logo and made the raptor with like feathers and a longer tail and actually made it correct to what the dinosaur looked like.
Somebody asked, could they still open doors? That's a good question. I don't know. They got so advanced they could open doors, but if they're tiny, like 2 feet tall dinosaurs, I'm not buying it. They can't even reach the handle.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I saw that. Okay. That's not bad. It's still not as it's not as cool as the current Raptor logo, but it's not bad.
Raptors are so badass. Our second grade baseball team, we called ourselves the Raptors. Yeah, because it was around Jurassic Park time. We're like, oh, those guys are mean. Yeah. I like that. It's intimidating.
Do you ever wonder if you are going to be a body 2,000 years from now that an alien digs up and like regenerates how we were and what we thought about, or
they reactivate your voice box,
whatever. Yeah. Like you ever think about like that mummy died and he was like, cause they think he died at like 50 because he got sick.
Okay.
Which 50 back then was actually a pretty good life.
I'd imagine thousands of years ago, that's a pretty decent time to live.
And he didn't die going, well, Gun in the box, wrap me up, and in a couple thousand years, we'll be way smarter as a species, and we can figure this stuff out.
They're going to have 3D printers to reprint my voice box to hear what I sounded like and then make stuff up about me singing in a church.
What if they found your body and my body, dug it up, figured out we did a radio show together, and then, like, propped us up with computers to redo the show?
Oh, God. They're gonna recreate my voice box and be like, that guy has a nasally voice. Get that thing out of here.
Look, something's going to be crazy because Elon's already talking about shipping people to Mars. The fact that we're doing that in 2020, I'm wondering where we're going to be in, like, 2022. Or no, like 2,222
right,
or something like that.
200 years.
200 years. How much more are we going to advance?
Yeah. Somebody said the raptor was the chihuahua of the dinosaur world.
That's depressing.
That is very depressing, man. They were intimidating.
Do you know how badass they were in Jurassic Park?
They were the evil empire in that movie.
But you rooted for them.
They were the anti-hero.
Didn't you root for the raptor? I loved the raptor. Yeah, dude.
In the first one, when they're like hunting the kids, you wanted them to eat the kids?
Well, kids were kind of annoying.
When they're like in the kitchen, you wanted them to rip the kids' heads off?
To be really honest, there was a lot of plot holes in that movie. The fact that those kids survived the T-Rex attack was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
The lawyer writing, rightfully so, gets eaten, but really? The kid got thrown off in a car into a tree and just was perfectly okay? Also, how did Dr. Alan Grant know for certain that if you didn't move, the T-Rex couldn't see you? He'd never seen a real T-Rex before. He's studying bones, and he concluded that?
He's read books, you know.
Sure, yeah, okay.
Archaeological
just pulling
records.
That out of his ass.
Yeah, I had no problem with the raptors in Jurassic Park, any of them. Especially with that the first one, that Australian guy who was the raptor expert gets eaten. How coincidental is that? I don't know. I don't know where the beginning of the show was going, but...
Joint gets put out.
That caught me off guard. I didn't see that coming. Mummy voice boxes, that's an all-time new for us.
Well, I've been trying to stay away more and more from the fake news.
You want the real mummy voice box news?
And I'm like...
Is there fake mummy news?
I've never really heard bad things about the BBC. Like, I'll say, hey, I read this in the New York Times, and I almost always have at least one friend. Oh, the New York Times, the fakest newspaper in the world. And I'm like, okay, well...
No counties.
Where am I supposed to get my information?
No counties.
Where am I supposed to get my information? But we got a good show today. We have three guests. It's going to be a loaded one. Rick Bucher at 2 o'clock. Nick Rolovich, the new Cougar coach. He's going to join us at around 1:05 to 1:08 p.m.
It's going to be random, but let's do it.
So the 1 o'clock segment is going to be very weird. It's going to be like 6 minutes of this topic, and then Nick Rolovich is going to join us, and then we're going to go way over the clock because it's the new head coach of Washington State. And at 12:30, Anthony Tresh of Pro Football Focus, he wrote an article about the college football teams coming back next year. And he believes the Oregon Ducks, if you take away the quarterback position, which that's a big one to be taken away, he believes if you take away the quarterback position, nobody has a better roster than the Oregon Ducks in college football next year.
Pretty complimentary stuff.
So it's a pretty big thing to say, and I want him to explain it with us at the Daily Ticker, so he'll join us coming up at 12:30. We're on Twitter, at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, at Brandon Sprague. And we'll start with the Zion debut. Did you watch? Were you one of those with a hot take that he's going to be a bust? And then how you felt at the 17-point fourth quarter? We'll talk a little Zion and the impact that he makes for the game. That's next. Dirt and Sprague with you. Happy Thursday on 1080 The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Anthony Tresh of Pro Football Focus is going to join us for the ticker. He wrote about the college football teams going into next year. He's got Oregon at number 4, and he writes that if you take away the quarterback position, Oregon has the best roster in the country. That's a very interesting thing to say, given how many players are departing from this team. But then you also have those defensive guys who collectively decided to come back for next season. So we'll talk to him coming up at the Daily Ticker. We'll just kind of start with the Zion Williamson debut. Last year I had a few times where I would watch a sporting event and I would I'd be like, you know what, give him this hot take right now. And it would kind of backfire. And I made a promise to myself that in 2020, don't do that.
Hold it.
Now, I think we all knew that he was going to be on a minutes restriction.
We did.
I'm kind of curious what you expected from Zion, because I know he had such a slow start. He didn't play well for really the first three quarters, and then he blew up in the fourth with 17, and he finished with 21. But what were you expecting from Zion versus what you ended up getting from that entire game? And your thoughts on Zion?
I don't think any of it was expected. One, because no matter what you thought of him playing and making his debut, I don't think anybody saw the first three quarters going that bad. Like, even with a minute's restriction, you expected a big dunk here or there, a big rebound, you know, throw it to him in the post every now and then. And he was very passive early in the game. He didn't want to take any shots. He finally got his bucket. He turned the ball over a couple of times, though, and early in the third quarter as well. He just didn't quite click for him. And then when he finally did, he did his damage from the three-point line. So in all, it was something that I wasn't expecting, because I didn't think he was going to look that bad for the first three quarters, and then I didn't think he was going to do all of his damage from the three-point line. And that was, I mean, the stat circulating last night in his time at North Carolina, he never had a game where he made four three-pointers, and he was 4 for 4 last night. He didn't miss one. And he scored 17 straight points mainly because he started knocking down threes and San Antonio just simply wasn't guarding him. I think both things can be true, though. Like, when you look at it, the people that want to come out with hot takes on Twitter and say he's terrible or what a bust, and part of that was on the telecast as well, and it was driving me nuts. Like, dude, the guy hasn't played a real game. When's the summer league going? July? Like, early August? Like, the guy hasn't played a real game. Those aren't even real games.
No.
He hasn't played a meaningful basketball game since the NCAA tournament last year. Like, can we pump the brakes on killing this kid because he doesn't look great and maybe he's a little out of shape because he hasn't been able to exercise to the level he wants? So I think you pump the brakes a little bit, but it's okay to acknowledge. Like, it was kind of boring and he didn't play that great for the first three quarters. Just don't draw a grand conclusion from it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of my thing was, I didn't want to go in saying, well, I want like four dunks. I want like six amazingly athletic rebounds. I just wanted to see him out there. And, you know, whatever he did, okay. But I also, even if he would have finished that night last night with 6 points, I wouldn't have come to the show and killed him.
No, there's no reason to kill him.
I understand why national shows feel like they need to do that, why they need to point out how he's not this and he's not that. But it's kind of ridiculous to run with the conclusion on a player after just one game of a career that might end up being 12 years long.
Right.
The numbers don't lie, though. He drew people to the TV. It was ESPN's highest rated game of the year. They actually switched from Denver-Houston to San Antonio-New Orleans once they found out Zion was in return for that game, and they were rewarded for it. They had their highest viewed game of the season. So, some of you might not think he's going to be much of anything. Some of you might be thinking he's going to be LeBron. I don't know where people are at. He got people to the TV.
He did.
And that is all that matters for ESPN, is getting those eyeballs on the TV.
That's exactly what we talked about yesterday. It's just what the NBA needs, I think, right now with the ratings struggling a little bit this year. It's going to be a shot in the arm for him, and people are going to tune in to watch him, especially off of the fourth quarter that he had last night. Part of me, though, early in that game, I wanted to throw my TV out the damn window. I don't know how you guys feel about Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. I've gotten to a point where they just annoy the hell out of me. Like, the first quarter was essentially them, after knowing he was going to play in short spurts. They said before the game he was going to play 3 to 6 minutes at a time. That was it. And I think he played the first 3 minutes of the first quarter. He didn't look great, and they took him out. They spent the rest of the first quarter basically criticizing him for being out of shape when he's been dealing with this knee injury. It's his first game. Like, can we just hold on? Like, can we just give him a little bit of time here before we throw him under the bus and call him a fat ass? And then in the second quarter, Mark Jackson spent like 8 minutes of the telecast trying to redraft last year's NBA draft about how he would take Ja Morant over Zion, and pressuring Van Gundy into saying, who would you take if you're redrafting? Who do you go with? And Van Gundy's like, dude, I've watched this guy play for 4 minutes. He played 2 minutes in the first quarter, 2 minutes in the second quarter, and you now want me to say that he's no longer worthy of being the number one overall pick? Can we just hold off on all this and enjoy watching him play? It was driving me nuts last night.
Well, I was just happy that he had to have such a strong finish. To have the fourth quarter that he had, four threes in the quarter and 17 points to finish where he finished. Yeah, we wanted to see him back at the end. I was like everybody else. They were kind of making a comeback.
I was pissed, man. I was so pissed.
But I also was like, I get it. If I'm in New Orleans and we're doing a radio show covering this, I'm probably thinking, as much as I want to see him, do not put him back out there, right? You don't want to push the injury in coming back. You want the return to be very smooth. He didn't look great in the beginning.
No, he wasn't moving very well. He was jogging, basically.
How many practices has he really had with that team? You know, when the season gets, I don't think people realize, when the season gets going, you really don't get practice time as much as you think they do. And so how many times did he really get to practice with them? How often was he running full court with them?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very
often. It's one thing to rehab. So I don't think he looked particularly in place because I don't think he knew where to be. I think he's still kind of figuring that out of how do I fit in with Lonzo and Ingram and Hayes or Drew? Like, how does he fit in with the roster, hitting JJ on the wing? He's figuring that out. And just like at Duke, he figured that out. I think he's going to be okay in the way he looks when he's playing with these guys. But he's out of shape. It's his first game back. And all I'm seeing are people just like, ah, well, what a dud.
This guy's a bum.
This isn't not impressed. I think it's like, calm down. It's one game. He's a smart kid. Let him get into game shape. Let him recover from this injury. And then we'll kind of judge him on the next few years because it shouldn't even be just a season.
Right.
You should be giving a player a year or three to really show what they are. This is the Myers-Leonard effect. You and I would have an opinion on Myers in year three. And up until like even last year, we still had people texting in, guys, I think Myers is still evolving and growing.
Gotta give him time.
And I'm like, it's year seven.
Right. How many years do you need?
I mean, the great players always get better, but like when you're a Myers Leonard, you don't get better. You are what you are. And now he's in Miami and look what he's doing.
He is what he is. He's the same player. Yeah. He only ended up playing 18 minutes last night. I am happy that he finished with a flurry because then I think it leads to like you walk through your head of this, the sports culture win right now and the tweets that are going to go on and the hot takes on the early morning shows, all that kind of stuff. That if he wouldn't have had that flurry in the fourth quarter, imagine what the conversation would have been. People were already killing him after three quarters, and if he doesn't go out for that in the fourth, everybody's labeling him a bust probably today and calling him a bum. So I would have felt really bad for him because it's unfair after the injury that he went through. And that was one thing at least I will give credit to the telecast for, was they pointed out the calendar in the last month of how many days off they've actually had to practice. And it was like three, I think they said. They wanted him to come back sooner, but they just haven't been able to get him practice time to get up to speed with everybody. And that's the main reason that they've held him out longer than the initial diagnosis was. But I'm glad that he had the flurry at the end. I will admit, though, today in the trustery, that I turned it off. I missed the start of his flurry because I watched the game through the first three quarters. And
you're only watching the game for Zion, really.
I was really only watching the game for Zion. And New Orleans was awful last night. Can we acknowledge that, too? Like, they were terrible. They couldn't make a three in the first half. Brandon Ingram had an off. He was 6-22. He was terrible last night. I want my money back because I put a bet on him. But after the three quarters, I was like, you know what? All right, I've given this time. He just doesn't seem to have it tonight. It's his debut. I wasn't going to kill him on Twitter or anything, but I did change the channel, and then I started getting texts. Oh, my God, Zion! And I had to flip it back, and there he was going off.
Zion did something that's very popular in American culture right now. When you watched Avengers Infinity War in 2018, the bad guy wins, and everybody has to just go, what? The movie's over? Thanos won?
Oh, spoiler alert, bro.
But guess what? They made an end game. He gave you 17 in the fourth, and then all you wanted was to see him at the end of that game, and then you want to see him now in the next game because you want to see what this is going to turn into.
You absolutely do.
He gave you a sequel. He gave you something to look forward to, and I don't think there's anything better that a player like him could do than that to set up intrigue for his next game.
Yeah, it was a perfect segue.
Smart move.
You totally just ruined that whole movie series for me.
Well, you weren't going to watch it anyway. You hate comic books.
Totally know.
Say, the Infinity War came out like 2 years
Dirt
ago.
Dirt doesn't fun. Dirt doesn't enjoy fun. all right, we got a lot more to get to. We're going to pivot from Zion to college football. Anthony Tresh of Pro Football Focus says the Oregon Ducks, if you take away the quarterback position, have the best roster coming back in college football. I want to find out why he thinks that. He joins us next for the Daily Ticker, but first, Joe with a sports update.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. Amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it's never a bad time to talk about college football. We love it out here in the Pacific Northwest. How about a way too early 2020 top 25 rankings? Pro Football Focus broke it all down with author and writer Anthony Tresh. He joins us as he broke down his top 25, giving reasons for why each team is placed where they're at. He is on Twitter at @PFF_Anthony. Give him a follow. For all things Pro Football Focus. Anthony, first of all, it's great to have you on in Portland, man. Thank you so much for joining us. And we went through your top 25, and we noticed Oregon sitting there at number 4, coming off their Rose Bowl. And your very first sentence caught us. And we both instantly thought, we got to get Anthony on. And that was, taking quarterbacks out of the conversation, Oregon has arguably the best roster top to bottom in college football. Anthony, that statement would surprise a lot of fan bases, especially in the Pac-12. Why do you feel that way?
Yeah, it definitely did surprise a lot of people. My mention did recognize that. But really, you know, looking at the roster, so we here at PFF have a new metric this season. It's called wins above average, and our data scientists did a remarkable job in developing that. And then when you look at who they're losing, they're just 29th in the FBS as far as wins lost, and they're fourth in returning wins. And so that kind of really placed them up there where they are at number four overall. And when you look at who they're losing, Justin Herbert's obviously the biggest one, but honestly, he's not even a big, huge loss, because I think people were kind of overvaluing his play, and he really wasn't accurate on a play-to-play basis. I mean, granted, he has a big arm, but I think that's the biggest question, is their quarterback. But their secondary is elite. I mean, right now it is the best in the country, and it's kind of hard to tell, you know, who's going to have the best secondary, who's going to be the best team overall in 2020, because there's a lot of unknowns, especially with true freshmen. You're not sure how much they're going to play and how that's going to go. But right now, at this very moment, the secondary, including Javon Holland, Mykael Wright, Thomas Graham, and Diamador, I mean, it is elite across the board. That's really why they're a top five team.
Well, and then I think the other main question mark around this team outside of quarterback that you alluded to, and we'll have to wait and see who wins that battle, is what the offensive line looks like. And we all talked about it last year. Everybody raved about all the starts that they had combined for, all the guys that were returning. It was a very experienced group. And there's just kind of one guy left, and they got to find four new starters up front. And I know you guys have graded Penei Sewell absolutely off the charts, and he's one of the best in the country. Where's the concern level and I guess the grade for starting four or five new offensive linemen?
Yeah, that's definitely the second biggest concern next to quarterback. I mean, I wouldn't maybe even the biggest concern, really. I mean, Penei Sewell, I mean, as you said, he was graded. He broke records here at PFF. He's the best tackle we've ever graded, and he was worth more in that wins above average metric than we've ever seen before. He was right up there with Quentin Nelson. I mean, he is going to be a special player for a long time, both in college and at the NFL level. So, I mean, there definitely is concern with that. And, you know, last year with Justin Herbert, I think his biggest flaw was he would get panicky under pressure. You could see that. If it was starting to come, you could see his feet start to move around. He wasn't sure where to go with the ball. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is can this quarterback, you know, create something outside of the structure on a consistent basis? Is he going to be able to stay comfortable and poised when the pocket's going to be collapsing? Because this offensive line is not going to be nearly as good as what it was this year. So there's definitely concern with that. And, I mean, I think they just need, like I said, that quarterback to be comfortable in those situations and remain accurate, because that was the biggest thing. And, you know, the wide receivers kind of hurt from that. I mean, Johnny Johnson, I think he can be a really good deep threat as long as someone accurate is throwing him the ball, because a lot of the deep targets he saw just weren't really that catchable. And when he did, he made some big plays. Granted, he did have a couple, you know, drops that were not so hot. But I think if they can just get a quarterback that can, you know, stay in the pocket, kind of create something, you know, step in and make the throw, I think that's the biggest thing with the offense.
Yeah. Anthony Tresh is our guest, Pro Football Focus. He wrote his top 25, the way too early top 25 for 2020 season coming up in college football. He also has Washington, by the way, at eighth. And he mentions the WAA stat. Utah is second in the country with what they're losing going from last year to this next season. Yeah. I'm kind of curious about this, Anthony, because you mentioned Justin Herbert and kind of maybe your guys' view when you plug in things within your system and you come to these opinions and these conclusions. He's one of those polarizing type quarterbacks, I think, up here, because a lot of Duck fans love him and think he's going to be great. I think you got a lot of other fan bases, or maybe even some Duck fans, who aren't as sold of him in the pro level. The Senior Bowl's this weekend, so I got to ask you, what is your thoughts on his potential in the NFL? Is there a comp that you guys are getting at Pro Football Focus for Herbert, maybe in the NFL, and just your belief of maybe him being a franchise guy?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, and I think I'm speaking for myself here, is that he kind of reminds me of Jay Cutler. You know, everyone, it was either you loved him or you hated him, and it was because of the big arm, and you saw a lot of potential when he makes a good throw. You just see that, and you're thinking, that's something a lot of people can't do, and he did that regularly. But at the same time, it's just whenever he couldn't do much outside of the, you know, the system. And I think a lot of his production, I believe he had 8 touchdowns off his screen passes this year. And that was up there with the most in the country. And I saw a lot of people throwing out his touchdown interception ratio. And I think that's when you have to look beyond the box score. So I think he kind of fits that Jay Cutler type where, you know, I can see why people love him, but at the same time, I can see why people don't like him. And right now, I mean, we had him kind of in the later end of the first round, and he's been dropping down our board significantly. You know, from what I have heard, you know, we have two PFF analysts down at the Senior Bowl right now, Mike Renner and Austin Gale. And so far, Justin Herbert looks like the best quarterback there. Granted, there's really not a whole lot of competition. So I think he can improve his stock because it's been going down really badly lately, especially with, you know, not playing too good in those big games. But, you know, you did make a good point. I did want to bring up Utah. I mean, I think they're hurting more than any other team in the country going into next year just because, you know, LSU, they're losing a lot, but they're bringing back a lot back. And Utah, they're not on the same category. So I'm glad you brought that up because they are definitely hurting.
Is there a best case scenario, you think, for Herbert if he's to succeed, if he is to maybe tap the potential that Jay Cutler maybe had just come short of? What team for you would make the most sense for to put him in the best position to succeed?
Well, I think there's a lot of potential with Herbert for sure. And I think he's, I don't think he's ready to start right now from day one. And I think he needs to go to a team with a veteran quarterback ahead of him just to kind of show, you know, show him how the process works and get him to be a leader at the NFL level. And, you know, Mike Renner, in his latest mock draft, he had him go to the New England Patriots. And if Tom Brady stays, I could not think of a better system for him to be in just because he would get the best support system in all of the NFL. I think that's what really he needs to succeed. I don't think he could go to, say, this whole Joe Burrow thing and he didn't emerge. And Justin Herbert might even still be in that conversation for that number one overall pick. I don't think he would be good in a situation where he is thrown in pretty much to the walls from day one with no big supporting cast. I think we've seen that, you know, a lot of it, like I said, a lot of his production was schemed up. So I think he needs to go to a team that can, you know, learn from him and they can both learn from each other and feed off of that. And eventually, maybe a few years down the road, you can see all that potential start to break out and he does it more regularly.
Yeah, sometimes it can be a benefit for those quarterbacks to drop a little bit in the draft. There's no doubt about that. I was curious to ask you one more thing. I mean, you mentioned a lot of this hype that you have around Oregon. I think people are excited to watch him next year, no doubt. But a lot of it comes from the new metric that you guys are using. I think the wins above average, I think, is what you said. I'm just curious. I mean, I don't follow analytics extremely closely. We always hear like little nuggets and stats here and there. I'm just curious, how do you guys come up with that metric? What goes into it? And, you know, how do you kind of weigh that out?
Yeah, you know, PFF grading has to do a lot of it, you know, positively and negatively graded play rate. And, you know, we look at that as well as expected points added. And I can't go into depth too much on it just because it's kind of proprietary at this moment. Mm-hmm. And our data scientists, they worked on it more than I did. I just get to use it, you know, I'm fortunate enough and lucky enough to really look at it all while they did all the hardcore math behind it. But yeah, you know, Oregon was really high in this metric, like I said, because of the secondary. And, you know, we all know quarterback is the most important position on the football field, but the second most is cornerback, and they're really, really good at that, and specifically slot cornerback. I mean, Javon Holland, he can stay with the receiver better than anyone in the country. So I think that's really where most of their success is. You know, ranking them fourth, I will say, I'm not saying, you know, they're going to go undefeated or they're going to be a lock for the college football playoff. But what I think what this does say is that no matter what, even with the quarterback situation, you know, kind of being shaky right now, I would be shocked if they lost any more than two games, especially when you look at their schedule. I mean, Ohio State's going to be a tough one. I think if they're going to lose any game, it's definitely going to be that one. And other than that, really the only other two games that really stand out to me that they could lose are against Washington and USC. And I think USC might even be the more likely one just because they will pretty much have the better quarterback because Slovis is one of the more accurate ones, and he's going to be really good. So I think it really all boils down to who has the better secondary, but more importantly, who has the better quarterback. So that's why I'm a little concerned with that.
Yeah. Great stuff, man. Anthony Tresh of Pro Football Focus wrote his Way Too Early 2020 top 25 rating rankings, and he says that Oregon is number four for him right now. Despite losing Herbert, he still thinks the talent they're returning with Penei Sewell and the secondary puts Oregon up there as one of the best rosters coming back in the next season. Anthony, man, really good stuff. We loved having you on. We'll have to get you back on maybe coming up here soon when college football is kind of around the corner and maybe break down some of the Pac-12 quarterbacks and whatnot.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no worries, man. Great. Thank you for coming on. There we go. Anthony Tresh of Pro Football Focus. His article is on our Twitter account, at Dirt and Sprague, and at 1080 The Fan is where you can find it as well.
It's a pretty bold statement, man. Most talent in the country returning top to bottom. I know LSU is replacing a lot. Clemson is...
LSU loses, by the way, the most wins above
average.
They
lose everybody. I mean, everybody's going to the NFL. They all jumped early outside of like one or two players. Ohio State, I mean, a guy like Chase Young, it's hard to duplicate that level of performance. Clemson's losing guys to the NFL every single year. But such key pivotal places on your roster as in the offensive line and quarterback are the two biggest questions for Oregon, which is why I was surprised by that metric.
Yeah. I still think offensive line will be fine because of Penne and...
Well, you trust Mario Cristobal.
Yeah, I think you trust Cristobal. That's his specialty. The quarterback one is obviously a very big one. Let's come back and talk about that. He's not too high on Justin Herbert. He thinks he has potential, but he kind of knocked what his season really was, and we'll just talk about maybe where he fits in the NFL. He's getting rave reviews at the Senior Bowl. We'll talk a little Herbert, and then Nick Rolovich, the head coach of Washington State, the new coach, is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll get to those things next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back with Dirt and Sprague on this Thursday afternoon. The top of the hour is going to be very interesting. Nick Rolovich is the new head coach for Washington State, but he's not going to join us till like 1:07.
That's going to be a little random. Sorry, boss man. Warn the affiliates. We are going slightly long at the top of the hour.
Work the magic. Work the magic. Good stuff from Anthony Tresh there of Pro Football Focus. Yeah, these guys, they're just crunching numbers.
That's all it is.
And they're using their analytics, and they're writing and explaining what they conclude. And so while you may disagree with how good Herbert was or was not in college, according to what Anthony Tresh said, I still find him to be a very polarizing player. I think some people think he's going to be a can't-miss franchise guy, and some people don't think he's going to be a franchise player. I just find the Herbert stuff very interesting, and he's been getting rave reviews all week at Senior Bowl. I read a thing about his leadership, the coaching staffs, both coaching staffs, by the way.
People are raving about him.
Have
this
been
week.
Really impressed with him as a leader. His arm is being noted of like, geez, he's got a cannon. And so maybe a team that's good, but maybe looking in the future at quarterback trades up a little bit to go get him. Some people believe all the quarterbacks are going to be taken within the first 12 picks.
Yeah.
What do you think about Justin Herbert and what we just heard from Anthony Tresh?
The Cutler comparison was an interesting one because I do feel like there's kind of two camps with Justin Herbert. You either, and most of it's Duck fans and non-Duck fans, you either love him or you just look at him and you say, I don't understand this at all. I tend to find myself somewhere in the middle there. I totally get why there's fears and concerns about him at the NFL. There wasn't a lot that he did over the last 2 years. They really stood out and jumped out. I thought maybe even at times he looked like he regressed as a quarterback. The comfort in the pocket, I think, was a great point as well. He never really seemed comfortable, didn't use his legs as much as people wanted him to, whether it was designed or undesigned, and just creating things on the scramble. The funny thing, though, about Herbert that I always like to add to the conversation is that we try and finish stories before they're written, and we don't know what system he's going to go into. We don't know what team he's going to get drafted by. We don't know when that team's going to call on him to play right away. And we just seem to think that because he struggled in a couple Pac-12 games, that means he stands absolutely no chance. A guy who's very similar to this, that when he found the right system, when everything clicked for him, look at Joe Burrow. Look how different the sentiment around Joe Burrow is now from a year ago. That was the amazing thing about LSU winning a national championship. Nobody saw this coming. He was average at best last year as a starter at LSU. He had to transfer out of Ohio State because he couldn't win a job. You get him in the right system where they kind of build it around him, a great mind in Joe Brady, great skill position players on the outside. It clicks. He's the best quarterback in the country. He wins a Heisman, and they win a national championship. I think for Herbert, honestly, the best thing that could have happened for him this year, as a Duck fan, it sucks because maybe the season could have been better, but the best thing for his future was the fact that he did struggle a little bit and it hurt his stock. I still think he's going to be a top 10, top 15 pick. I don't see him falling further than that because teams are desperate for quarterbacks. And if you're taking
Allen, hell of a prospect.
If you're taking Josh Allen at number 10 or 11, you're taking Justin Herbert at number 10 or 11, but that could end up being a blessing in disguise for him where he goes to a better spot, better system, sits around for a little bit, and he's not thrown into a dumpster fire like Cincinnati.
Yeah, the Jay Cutler thing, by the way, I can understand that when you hear that name where you go with it, but I don't think that's a bad comp. Jay Cutler was a good quarterback in the NFL. He wasn't amazing.
Sure, he wasn't top five in the league.
No, but he had some really good years. I mean, he helped take Chicago to the NFC Championship game, right? That means something. He was pretty productive his last 2 years in Denver. He had 20 touchdowns, 14 picks, 3,400 in his first real season starting. And then in 08, he threw for 4,500 yards.
Yeah.
So I don't think you have to hear a Jay Cutler comp and instantly go to Miami Jay Cutler or at the end of Chicago Jay Cutler and go, sure. Oh God, here we go. But I think you can take that and say, all right, if he goes to the right situation, how much better can he be than what Jay Cutler was? Because these guys aren't bringing Herbert in to just be run-of-the-mill quarterback. They're going to take him presumably with a top 15 pick. That's a franchise guy.
Yep, yep.
You know, this is the guy you're going to hand the keys to. And I understand the negative scrutiny he gets. He's very quiet. Seems like he's kind of passive, I think, from the outside looking in. I understand how those can be a bit of a red flag for some. And I'm still going to wait a little longer to give my full like opinion of what I think he is as a prospect before we get to the draft. But I don't think you need to hear everything that Tresh was saying or a Jay Cutler comp and then instantly be pissed off and mad.
Oh, no, he shouldn't be pissed off anything.
The reality
like that.
Is, what did he get better in his final two seasons? Yeah, I don't think he regressed. I just don't think he advanced. I don't think he flourished quite as well as we thought he would by the time he started his last season right. as the starting quarterback. And some of that is probably coaching, no yeah. doubt. And then a little bit of, you know, maybe it is him. Maybe it's mostly coaching. I don't know where you place blame for player development with guys like that sometimes. But his last 2 years were no different than each other.
Right.
And usually that last year, you're looking for the guy to take that next big step.
When the completion percentage was higher, that was just mainly because Oregon players knew how to catch the football for the most part this year, and they didn't lead the country in drops, which really killed his completion percentage. He also had more weapons to work with this year. The million-dollar question, though, is something you pointed out, and that is just the coaching situation that was around him. A lot of people had questions about Oregon's offensive coordinator, developing a quarterback, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's fair when it's brought into the Herbert conversation. The least surprising thing, though, for me this week is that he's getting rave reviews at a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always maintained, I don't know how many people have had the chance to see him in person or be next to him. It's one of those things, man, when you see him, you're in awe. It's amazing. There's big quarterbacks. I remember my first time being that way at a college quarterback was Andrew Luck and being like, dude, this guy's a monster. I didn't realize how big he is.
Biggest head I've ever seen
right?
in person
like, this guy's
in my
massive.
Life.
And then you yeah. stay next to Justin Herbert. He looks like a defensive end. Like you don't realize how big he is and how built he is. And when you see him throw the football, like it just all of a sudden clicks for you why scouts are drooling all over him. And then you add in the fact that he's got a great personality. He gets along great with people. They do like his leadership behind the scenes. He's not a big rah-rah guy on the sidelines, but his teammates love him. He's very similar to Mariota in
very
that regard,
similar, yeah.
just the personality wise. So the fact that he's getting rave reviews at a Senior Bowl when it's about showing off your strength and your arm and your understanding of the game and then your personality, that's the least surprising thing of the week.
And your Oregon thought on what he said, man, like that's, he didn't guarantee, he's not saying he's picking him to make the playoff or anything. He's just saying,
sure,
using that metric,
which we don't know how he uses the metric, but yes,
right. They're only
going
to give us so much information, but
right.
with that metric is the fourth team and maybe the best roster sans quarterback. That's a hell of a compliment.
It's a hell of a compliment. I think there's, again, I always try and find the middle ground on something. It's okay to look at it and say, not quite buying it, but I also don't understand the people that completely laugh at the notion, because I've seen a lot of that on Twitter today, like, what the hell is this guy smoking? I don't see any of it. Oregon's going to have the best defense in the conference next year, and I don't even really think it's close. They're returning basically everybody outside of Dye and Winston.
They're
replacing him with five-star yeah. talents at linebacker. He's recruited at the highest level the program has ever seen. You're returning your entire secondary. The way Brady Breeze came on at the end of the year was huge. Kayvon Thibodeau is only scratching the surface of his talent and his potential, and he's only going to continue to get better. You had difference makers as freshmen who are going to be sophomores next year. That defense is going to be the best in the conference and, again, is going to carry this football team. So I understand when you point to that and say, I could see Oregon having a really good year next year because they're going to be great on that side of the ball. It's hard, though, to analyze it when you say take the most important position on the field out of the equation, because the quarterback position is the most important. I don't have as big offensive line questions as some, mainly because of the point you brought up. It's Mario Cristobal's spot. I mean, that's his strength, and he's done a great job of recruiting dynamite offensive line prospects.
There are some examples, sure. How often do you get the best left tackle in the country and the line sucks?
Right.
There's something about having that right. one. I know center is important, right? Obviously, they all matter, but you don't get it very often where a guy is so good. If you tell me Penei Sewell somehow ends up in the Heisman conversation, I'm not going to be stunned. He's clearly that talented.
He's going to be a top five pick next year.
He won the Outland Award. Yes. He's Pro Football Focus has never had a offensive lineman ever rate this high.
No, he broke all their records this year.
It just doesn't happen where the line completely sucks, right. But you have the best left tackle in the country.
Right, and you also, when you recruit at the level that they have, it's a big part of the equation, man, and he is replacing talent with some incredibly talented players.
Yeah, plus it's a different offense. So what's the offensive line need to be versus what you expect it to be? It could be a much different asking from the new OC, Joe Moorhead. All right, we got a loaded second hour. We're going to kick it off with Nick Rolovich, the new head coach of Washington State. He joins us hour number two next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.